We finished off last time at Joshua 4. And then there's some backup and revisit of one item. Gathering the stuff and bringing it in. We talked about where the Jordan River was dammed up, and that was north by Adam. And there's a little note in my uncle's book. As the priest carrying the ark entered the Jordan, its waters parted, and the Israelites were able to walk into the promised land. The Bible mentions that the water was blocked at Adam, which is usually identified as a place upstream where landslides are known to have occurred. The blocking of the Jordan River happened twice in the 20th century, in 1906 and 1927. In 1927, the Jordan was dammed up for 21 hours. Some scholars think a similar mechanism, landslide, was used by God to dam up the Jordan for Joshua. Others prefer to think of it as entirely supernatural. Regardless, the timing requires a miracle. And not only that, but being 15 miles upstream, the landslide would have had to be timed exactly so that the waters receding would get to the point where they receded as the priests put their foot into the water. Just absolute perfect timing. And no human being is able to do that because for us, everything is along the timeline. For God, he sees what is before and during and after all at once. So we've experienced God answering a prayer, beginning the answer before the prayer is prayed. And so for them. And then we go to chapter 5. As soon as all the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan to the west, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan for the people of Israel until they had crossed over, their hearts melted, and there was no longer any spirit in them because of the people of Israel. Verse 2.
At that time, the Lord said to Joshua, "Make flint knives and circumcise the sons of Israel a second time."
Okay, you know how you make a flint knife? It's struck with stones so that the flint flakes off and you get a very sharp edge. But they're going to be circumcised, and you don't circumcise the same person a second time. But this goes back to Mount Sinai and the dedication of the people of Israel before they set out, that they were to be circumcised. That's the sign God gave to Abraham, that among his descendants was to be the one who is the Christ. And apparently that had fallen into disuse when the answer would be after the Israelites refused to go into the promised land, and God declared that that generation would die in the wilderness, and they were cut off from him. And so after that point, nothing happened in terms of covenant relationship. For about 40 years, the time came to reestablish the covenant, and this is the beginning. Verse 3. So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the sons of Israel at Gibeath Haaraloth. And it wouldn't be Joshua alone doing this. It would be Joshua supervising.
Wasn't it usually the priests that did the circumcision?
Oh, yeah, but it could be anybody. It could be fathers circumcising sons. Mm-hmm. Was it the whole people of Israel? No, it was not. Because the ones who died in the wilderness were the ones of legal age, 20 years and older, when the people of Israel rebelled and refused to go into the promised land. But those who had come out of Egypt who were under 20 years of age, they were not the ones that died in the wilderness. So everybody who was under 20 years of age when they rebelled and refused to go in had already been circumcised. They were now between 40 and 60 years old. And so that puts a different spin on things, doesn't it? It is only those who were under 40 years old. Verse 4.
And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the males of the people who came out of Egypt, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way after they had come out of Egypt.
Mm-hmm. To be precise, all the men of war who were men of war those 40 years ago had died. Verse 5, though all the people who came out had been circumcised, yet all the people who were born on the way in the wilderness after they had come out of Egypt had not been circumcised. Verse 6. Oh, by the way, where do you count the ending of having come out of Egypt? Is it at the Red Sea? Is it at the arrival at Sinai? Is it the refusal to go into the promised land? So there is some looseness in the language. But verse 6.
The Israelites had moved about in the desert 40 years until all the men who were of military age when they left Egypt had died, since they had not obeyed the Lord. For the Lord had sworn to them that they would not see the land that he had solemnly promised their fathers to give us, a land flowing with milk and honey.
Mm-hmm. So it was their children whom he raised up in their place that Joshua circumcised, for they were uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way. Okay. Verse 8.
And after the whole nation had been circumcised, they remained where they were in camp until they were healed.
Yep. And if you recall an incident back in Genesis with Jacob's sons, on the third day is when the men of this one town were the most sore and unable to move, that Joshua's two sons went and killed them. Mm-hmm. So, okay, 3 days from the circumcising. It is the 10th day of the month that they came out of, or that they came through the Jordan River. It would be the 11th day that the circumcising took place. The Passover was to be slain at twilight on the 14th day. That would be 3 days after that. And the Passover eaten on the 15th. Who's going to prepare the Passover? Well, it's the ones that had been circumcised before who did not have to be redone. And the second question is, why didn't the Canaanite nations attack when all the Israelites were unable to fight? Well, because they weren't all unable to fight. Dalich makes that point. in some detail. Let's see, verse 8. No, we read that, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. 9.
And the Lord said to Joshua, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. And so the name of that place is called Gilgal. Sounds like the Hebrew for to roll. To this day, the historian that is writing the account accompanying Joshua writes this. Okay, the reproach of Egypt was to live in a foreign nation as if you are not the people of God. And the reproach of Egypt being rolled away is to be called once again the people of the Lord. So, second thing to be done, verse 10.
While the people of Israel were encamped at Gilgal, they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month in the evening on the plains of Jericho.
And the day after the Passover, on that very day, they ate of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. Verse 12.
Manna stopped the day after they ate this food from the land. There was no longer any manna for the Israelites, but that year they ate of the produce of Canaan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They have now entered. They have observed the Passover. They have had the business of the Passover celebration and the setting free from Egypt and everything else like that commemorated. They have been once again circumcised. Sign of circumcision is that it is not by the might or power of man, but it is by the Lord's work in things that we are totally and completely helpless, and we acknowledge that. I can go into the detailed putting together of that teaching, but not right now. That comes in the book of Romans. Verse 13. When Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? Dillich takes one little detour and says, is this a vision or is this reality? And he identifies the phrase, Joshua went to him, as proving that it is something that actually happened. Because if there is vision, it just floats out there in front of you. But there was a man standing there, sword in hand. Verse 14.
And he said, no, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshiped and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant?
Who is this guy?
God.
Archangel? Michael, is it?
God.
Okay, we got both speculative answers here. Let's read slowly verse 15. And the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, notice what he does not say to Joshua, which is the thing that the angel in the book of Revelation said to John. Do not do that, namely to worship. for I am a servant also. Worship God.
Oh.
He doesn't give that correction. Clue number one. So the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. What's that sound like?
Sounds like Jesus.
Burning bush.
Burning bush. Yeah. It's a fair conclusion then to say, this is God, the second person of the Trinity, the same person who appeared to Moses. What was that? 40 years earlier, a little bit more than 40. So take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so. Oh, okay. Now we've got the setting laid out, and we're about to have the action sequence. Chapter 6. Now Jericho was shut up inside and outside because of the people of Israel. None went out and none came in. They are fully ready for war. And the people of Israel have no experience with siege warfare, where it doesn't matter if you have more people, more soldiers, if the walls are solid, you're not getting in. And eventually you could breach it, but it will take a whole lot and a lot of dead bodies. And if you wait them out, eventually you can conquer, but it will take a whole lot of time until the food runs out. But verse 2.
And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have delivered Jericho into your hands, along with its king and its fighting men.
Who is it that said to Joshua? Clue number three.
The Lord.
Yeah.
All in caps, which means.
It is God who is talking to him. And God appears to him as a man with a drawn sword. Okay. Verse 3. How's God going to give Jericho into his hands? You shall march around the city, and all the men of war going around the city once. Thus you shall do for 6 days. Okay, just march around it once a day for 6 days. Verse 4.
As 7 priests carry trumpets of ram's horns in front of the ark, on the 7th day, march around the city 7 times with the priest blowing the trumpets.
Okay.
And your uncle said that it probably would take all morning to march around it once, or, you know, part of the day anyway, a couple hours.
Well, that actually depends on how wide of a procession you have.
That's true.
And the wider the procession, the more people you're packing in, and the more, this is part of my reading of the whole thing. You know, as you tend to march in a group, you tend to synchronize your footsteps. And as you synchronize your footsteps, you pack down the ground. And then when you've packed down the ground, you set up vibrations. And as you set up vibrations, if you are all the way around it, marching around it, the vibrations encircling it will come together to a point and reverberate back out. And so it's going to be some thumping, like two granddaughters when you get into an elevator.
Jump, 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 jump.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it made her sick to her stomach. So after that, every time we got on the elevator, she sat down. I said, what about the jumping? She said, sick to my stomach. Serves you right.
But we do know. Well, we don't know. We do know about harmonic vibrations. And when an army marches across a bridge, what do?
Break step.
Yeah, they break step. They have a discipline of not walking in harmony with each other, because if they do, the bridge can collapse. That's how powerful that is. How many Israel soldiers do you have? 600,000? What? And you're going to march them around? This could be impressive. Meanwhile, the people of Jericho are probably inside mocking them, maybe throwing rotten food. Okay. And the priests are bearing the ram's horns. And the ram's horn, of course, is a symbol of the lamb. Did we read verse 4 yet?
Yes.
Okay. And, there would be priests before, priests after the ark, and the people following on. Verse 5. And when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, then all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city will fall down flat. And the people shall go up, everyone straight before him. There's a note in verse 5. Fall down flat, the Hebrew says, under itself. Does that mean collapse from the bottom up? Okay, so verse 6.
So Joshua the son of Nun called the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant and let seven priests bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. And he said to the people, go forward, march around the city and let the armed men pass on before the Ark of the Lord. Okay. And verse 8.
And just as Joshua had commanded the people, the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord went forward, blowing the trumpets, and the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord following them.
Okay, so this is a little correction from how he remembered it. So you have seven priests, seven trumpets of ram's horn before the Ark of the Covenant, and they're blowing the trumpets. The Ark of the Covenant is following the priests. And then verse 9, the armed men were walking before the priests who were blowing the trumpets, and the rear guard was walking after the Ark while the trumpets blew continually. How did they blow the trumpets? In what pattern? And very often you will have short blasts. And it can be a marching, what would you call it?
Cadence.
Marching cadence. Yes, very good. Because at the end, when they're told to make the long blast, that's very distinct. Delitzsch goes off on a detour here, and he says, look at what's happening here. You have the Ark of the Covenant, that is the presence of God. God is among his people. And God being among his people, he is circling around the city of Jericho to claim that as his own. And God has come into their presence. They are not marked by the covenant. They are not marked by the blood of the Lamb. They are not called innocent in God's eyes because of all that God has done for them. They are separated from God and enemies of God, and the presence of God among his enemies is a terrifying thing to the enemies, and judgment is coming. Now, all of this in place.
We're halfway through.
Check on them.
Check on them. I hear something. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Okay.
What.
So we are now to verse 10.
But Joshua had commanded the people, "Do not give a war cry. Do not raise your voices. Do not say a word until the day I tell you to shout. Then shout."
Okay. So they're marching around in total silence, which, again, to my mind, that seems to be something that would be unnerving. And just very quietly marching along, and what do they want? They're just marching along. They're not responding to any of the taunts from the people of Jericho. Off the subject question, as they march along, if one of them steps on the other's toe, does he say, "Excuse me"? Or is it, "No, you have to be silent"? And there is, when you get an entire group, a very large group, to observe complete silence, it becomes a very impressive thing. Also, experience from out on the road bicycling. Which dog do you not want to mess with? The one who barks and runs after you, or the one who's totally silent as he chases you? Honestly, it's the one who is silent who is more serious about what he's going to do if he gets there. That's the one that does worry you. The one that barks, you know, I used to have this one dog that would come out and bark and run alongside. And so I'd increase my pace and say, "Come on, come on." And he'd run with me for a little while and then leave off. But no, there was another one who was silent as he pursued you. And there was an incident where he caught a kid on a bicycle. And that was bad news. So the silence can be intimidating. It also makes the shouting very pent up. Verse 11. So he caused the ark of the Lord to circle the city, going about it once. And they came into the camp and spent the night in the camp. Verse 12.
Joshua got up early the next morning, and the priest took up the ark of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. And the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord walked on, and they blew the trumpets continually, and the armed men were walking before them, and the rear guard was walking after the ark of the Lord, while the trumpets blew continually. Verse 14.
And the second day they marched around the city once and returned into the camp. So they did for 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
So this reminds me of the song, "Joshua fought the battle of Jericho, Mm-hmm. I don't know who wrote it, but this is all pertaining to that.
Yeah.
I only know that from my past.
Okay, I have to very briefly look at a couple of other things.
So they were being good. They were just mm-hmm. laughing at stuff that they were creating on their phone and stuff. Dahlia now has a phone. She's 13. And she's discovered how to take a picture and another picture and put them together and make weird things. So that's yep. what they were laughing about. And continue to laugh about it too.
There is one verse in here during the account where should be translated according to the directions or according to the command in terms of the and marching around the city. And it is significant that they're doing things according to what they've been told to do. So we get to verse 15. On the seventh day, they rose early at the dawn of day and marched around the city in the same manner seven times. It was only on that day that they marched around the city seven times. Verse 16.
The seventh time around, when the priest sounded the trumpet blast, Joshua commanded the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city."
Mm-hmm. "And the city and all that is within it shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent." Verse 18.
"Keep away from the devoted things so that you will not bring about your own destruction by taking any of them. Otherwise, you will make the camp of Israel liable to destruction and bring trouble on it."
Mm-hmm. Yep. So if you bring in a thing devoted,
an idol,
then you are devoted. If you keep in the camp of Israel a devoted thing, then the camp of Israel is devoted to destruction.
So he's talking about idols.
Yeah.
False gods and things.
Well, anything from Jericho. And the reason why everything is devoted to the Lord, and they're not going to take any wood, fabric, anything. The metal things that cannot be burned will be devoted to the house of the Lord. They may be melted down and refashioned into something because they don't burn, but clothing, furniture, everything is to be burned. Total destruction. And the reason why, and Delitzsch spells this out, is because God was giving them the entire land of Canaan. Jericho is the first fruits, and the first fruits is to be given entirely to God. And so Jericho, nothing is to be left of it. Yeah. What verse was that?
18.
18. Yep. Verse 19, but all silver and gold and every vessel of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord. So it's a complete and total ban of anything from Jericho. Once Jericho is destroyed, then when they go to the other cities, there will be not a complete and total ban of the objects and the possessions, only of the people. And there may be some exceptions on that. But Jericho was known as the gateway to Canaan on the east. It was a fortified city that was set up as a fortified city with the knowledge of the other cities of Canaan, so that this is our outpost to defend our territory from anyone coming over the Jordan. And so highly reinforced, which also means then that the walls were highly reinforced.
Yeah, your uncle said there were two, an inner wall and an outer wall.
Mm-hmm. Yep, causeway between battlements on. And that way, if you breach the outer wall, there you are stuck between, and then you die. It's quite a remarkable thing. But
the vessels of silver and gold and all of that got to stay.
Yeah, because you can't burn them. All you can do is melt them, and there's still going to be silver and gold. So, verse 20.
So the people shouted, and the trumpets were blown. As soon as the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted a great shout, and the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before it, and they captured the city.
Mm-hmm. So the walls completely collapsed. And Rahab's house was built partly connected to the wall, and now the wall collapses. Does that leave her house open for everybody from the outside to see? Very possibly. But there is this designation, and the people of Israel have been marching around noticing the scarlet yarn in the window. 21, then they devoted all in the city to destruction, both men and women, young and old, oxen, sheep, and donkeys with the edge of the sword. Verse 22.
Joshua said to the two men who had spied out the land, go into the prostitute's house and bring her out and all who belong to her, in accordance with your oath to her.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So these are the guys who know who is belonging to that house. So the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and mother and brothers and all who belonged to her. And they brought all her relatives and put them outside the camp of Israel. Why?
Had to be purified, didn't they?
Ah, they're not part of Israel yet, are they?
Nope, not yet.
Okay. Verse 24.
And they burned the whole city and everything in it. But they put the silver and gold and the articles of bronze and iron into the treasury of the Lord's house.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. And she has lived in Israel to this day. What's the range of when that could have been written? We're talking time frame for that one phrase.
Well, she was an old woman when she was still alive.
Yeah.
No.
It's within her years, within her lifespan.
Years. Yeah.
Within her lifespan is when that is put into the book. Mm-hmm. So we have a what do they call it? A terminus. The last point at which these things could have been written into the book. Things like this. And I'm going to make a guess that all of the things that have the character of looking back and saying unto this day happened about the same time as a wrapping up of the book. And this would give a specific limitation for how long after the events that these things could be written. So you can say, oh, I don't know, 40, 60 years, but with living memory of these things. Verse 26. Oh, no, before verse 26. Rahab then would be taken, and she and her family brought into the nation of Israel. There would be purifications, there would be water, there would be offerings, there would be circumcision, and they would officially become part of the people of God. On what basis? And it says there, because she hid the spies, but dig one step deeper. And
it was her faith.
And where you get is, for the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. On the basis of Rachel's or Rahab's confession of faith. And it's important to go that one more step. That's how they are made a part of the people of Israel, because of that confession of faith. Where does the faith come from? That's one more step again. Where does the faith come from? No, it's an obvious question. Where does the faith come from?
The Holy Spirit.
Yes. So God seeks her out and claims her to be his. Who is Rahab's most famous descendant?
Jesus.
Jesus. Who is Rahab's second most famous descendant?
David.
Yes. Okay. Then verse 26.
At that time, Joshua pronounced the solemn oath, cursed before the Lord is the man who undertakes to rebuild this city, Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn son will he lay its foundations. At the cost of his youngest will he set up its gates.
Okay, which is not entirely how it sounds to modern ears. Thank you, Dalich, for providing the additional information. The word buildeth to the does not refer to the restoration of houses, but to the restoration of the town as a fortification. Oh, that's different. Well, he is going to be very specific in that.
If I have a note in my Bible for 1 Kings 16, verse 34.
Yep. Yeah. So.
Talks about, is it Hiel of Bethel rebuilt Jericho? He laid its foundations at the cost of his firstborn son. And he set up its gates at the cost of his youngest son, in accordance with the word of the Lord spoken by Joshua, son of Nun.
So let me give you the in-between. Delitzsch, a town is not founded by the erection of a number of houses upon one spot, but by the joining of these houses together into an enclosed whole by means of a surrounding wall, more particularly from the last words of the verse in which the completion is defined as setting up the gates. So just to have a house there does not mean that you have rebuilt it. If setting up the gates would be a sign of the completion, then laying the foundation can only be understood as referring to the foundation of the town wall. Fact is, Joshua himself allotted Jericho to the Benjamites, along with certain other towns. That's in Joshua 18, 21. Which shows that he intended for them to inhabit it.
But not to set up a fortress.
We find Jericho mentioned afterward as an inhabited place. Two references to that. Judges 3:13 talk about Jericho as an inhabited place. 2 Samuel 10 verse 5. And yet it was not until at the time of Ahab that Joshua's curse was fulfilled when Hiel, the Bethelite, undertook to make it a fortified town. Then there's 1 Kings 16, verse 34.
In his days, Hiel of Bethel built Jericho. He laid its foundation at the cost of Abiram, his firstborn, and set up its gates at the cost of his youngest son, Segub. How did you pronounce it, Terry?
I didn't.
According to the word of the Lord, which he spoke to Joshua and the son of Nun.
But apparently, the curse refers to rebuilding it as a fortified town.
Because it was already a town. Is what you're saying.
Because Joshua assigned it to the Benjamites, to the tribe of Benjamin, where they could claim that as their territory and live there. They could build houses. Nothing would happen. They could call it Jericho. Nothing would happen. And then in 2 Samuel 10, verse 5. So we're going to look up those two verses, Judges 3:13, just to lock this in, 3:13, about Ehud. He gathered to himself the Ammonites and the Amalekites, went and defeated Israel. And they took possession of the city of palms, which is Jericho. And then 2 Samuel 10, verse 5. There we go. When it was told David, he sent to meet them, for the men were greatly ashamed. And the king said, remain at Jericho until your beards have grown and then return. But it is not yet that Jericho is recognized as a fortified town rebuilt until comes along in the next book after 2 Samuel, and it is chronologically the next book. And in 1 Kings 16, then it is rebuilt. At the time of Ahab, who's quite a bit down the road from David, in terms of when he lived and when he reigned.
And the footnote also says, I've already turned the page, but the footnote says that Ahab's evil acts were evident in the people's disregard for the Lord's command. And that's why Hiel or whoever he is built the city, because he disregarded the Lord's command.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody was when Ahab was the king.
Okay, so then moving on, chapter 7. But the people, we didn't read verse 27. So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was in all the land. But the people of Israel broke faith in regard to the devoted things, for Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took some of the devoted things. And considering that everything is devoted, we don't need to know what it was at this point. And the anger of the Lord burned against the people of Israel. Okay. Can they just once follow directions?
No, they're people. We don't do that very well.
Two.
Especially when you've got thousands and thousands and thousands of them.
Yeah, somebody's going to mess up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is near Beth Aven, east of Bethel, and said to the men, go up and spy out the land. And the men went up and spied out Ai.
And they returned to Joshua and said to him, do not have all the people go up, but let about 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and attack Ai. Do not make the whole people toil up there, for they are few. Okay. Verse 4.
So about 3,000 men went up there from the people, and they fled before the men.
And the men of Ai killed about 36 of their men and chased them before the gate as far as Shebarim and struck them at the descent, and the hearts of the people melted and became as water. And this is what happens when you step away from the relationship with God.
Were these were more people in Canaan that they were supposed to defeat?
Yeah, that's the next town that they went to attack.
Okay.
And total failure.
Even though the spies said piece of cake.
Yeah.
The Lord had not told them to actually do that.
Well, it's because the guys took some, or the man took some of the devoted things.
Yeah.
I think.
So it's, you want to be
did they find that after, did they find out about the people taking the devoted things after the defeat?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the next story.
So he admitted it.
Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until the evening. he and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. Verse 7.
And Joshua said, "Ah, sovereign Lord, why did you ever bring this people across the Jordan to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us? If only we had been content to stay on the other side of the Jordan."
Yeah, well, swayed by emotions, right? Oh, Lord, what can I say when Israel has turned their backs before their enemies? Oof. Verse 9.
For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it and will surround us and cut off our name from the earth. And what will you do for your great name?
Okay. And that sets us up for what's to come. Verse 10, the Lord said to Joshua, "Get up. Why have you fallen on your face?" And Achan is about to be found out. But that's for another time and another day.